You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody, and happy Monday. My name is Maggie Dawn. You are listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Some breaking news. I got a great guest co-host, and I want to promo right now. You're not going to want to go anywhere, because at 4:30, we're going to be joined by an economist who doesn't sound like an economist. I'd like to think of him as an economist in the Maggie Dawn vein of economists, you know, that speak the normal English that is understandable to everyone. His name's Benga Ajilore. He's a chief economist at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. He's going to talk about the risks that the Trump billionaire tax cut plan is posing to rural hospitals and other medical centers here in Wisconsin. I think that is absolutely essential. Folks, your health care is at risk. We're going to talk about that with Dr. Ajilore. Again, that's going to be at 4:30. I got Matt Rothschild riding along with me today. He's the host of Wisconsin Forward, a wonderful podcast you can find wherever you find your favorite podcast, and of course at civicmedia.us. I've got some breaking news coming out, Matt, that is related and super important to our discussion today. Just within this past hour, in a stunning moment, a slew of Senate Republicans have come out very clearly against Donald Trump's tax cuts for billionaires and 100 millionaires and mega corporations budget reconciliation package. This is a big deal. Republicans opposing the package include Ron Johnson for all the wrong reasons, Rand Paul for some of the right reasons, but some of the wrong reasons, Susan Collins and Josh Hawley, and I cannot believe I'm saying this, Josh Hawley for most of the right reasons, specifically Josh Hawley, calling the proposed devastating historic cuts to Medicaid, quote, immoral. That is Josh Hawley's language in an op-ed published last, I believe, Monday in the New York Times. But I wanted to start on a slightly different note this afternoon, Matt. Did you hear any of the kerfuffle starting on Friday and over the weekend, Matt, related to Jim Comey's errant and in totally bad judgment post to Instagram? It was the shell grouping on a beach that said 8647. 86 used to be a restaurant term that referred to the fact that you ran out of something. It grew to mean like 86ing someone, killing someone, 47, meaning the 47th president. He apologized, said he didn't know that. Shouldn't have done it, stupid. But the right wing acted like Jim Comey actually meant it, which I thought was weird, given that Donald Trump has actually fomented violence. Seemed a little off to me, didn't it?
Yeah, and it's, I mean, I can understand. I don't like Jim Comey because what he did to Hillary Clinton, because I think he did more to, you know, defeat Hillary Clinton than any of the Russian stuff did. So I don't like Jim Comey, but, you know, a lot of people his age and my age think 86 is the old restaurant term and aren't hip enough to know that it means you should bump someone off.
Yeah, it was stupid. I'm not, Jim Comey to me is the example of when people in government think that their judgments, their subjective judgments about things are presumptively correct and don't gut check themselves. It's why there are policies and things within departments. And Jim Comey, I think, let his ego get the best of him back in 2016 for sure. But just in case we've got some of our conservative friends listening, they're like, that Jim Comey needs to be investigated because he threatened the president. I just like to remind us all of this little ditty from Donald Trump.
And I don't blame him for sticking with his daughter. But his daughter is a very dumb individual, very dumb. She's a radical war hawk. Let's put her with a rifle standing there with 9 barrels shooting at her, okay? Let's see how she feels about it. You know, when the guns are trained on her face.
Just wanted to, again, put some things in context. Thought we could start there on this Monday morning with that reminder. I wanted to start today in our really more deep substance, Matt, talking about the hiccups in the market following Friday's bond downgrade of U.S. Treasuries by Moody's. It was the last downgrade in a number of downgrades. And here's what Moody's had to write. And there is more breaking news just happening. Fannie Mae has been also downgraded just moments ago by Moody's. Fannie Mae is a government, it's like a quasi public-private entity. It's used for a lot of student loans. Anyways, that downgrade following the U.S. government bond downgrade by Moody's. Here's what Moody's analysts had to say about the U.S. bond downgrade. Successive U.S. administrations and Congress have failed to agree on measures to reverse the trend of large annual fiscal deficits and growing interest costs. We do not believe that material multi-year reductions in mandatory spending and deficits will result from current fiscal proposals under consideration. If the 2017 Tax Cuts and Jobs Act is extended, just a reminder, everybody, that's the Donald Trump tax cuts for billionaires and 100 millionaires, part one. They're debating part two presently. Is extended, Moody says, which is our base case, it would add at least $4 trillion to the federal fiscal primary deficit over the next decade. As a result, we expect federal deficits to widen, reaching nearly 9% of GDP by 2035, up from 6.4% in 2024, driven mainly by increased interest payments on debt. We anticipate the federal debt burden will rise to 134% of GDP by 2035. This decision to lower the U.S. credit profile and rating would be expected to lift the yield that investors demand in order to buy treasury debt to reflect more risk and could dampen sentiment toward owning U.S. assets, including stocks. Now with the downgrade on Fannie Mae, this is, for folks that don't know much about credit rating agencies, you've got Fitch's, Moody's, and Standard & Poor's. These are the three major national credit rating agencies. These are the agencies that institutional investors and international investors look at to assess the riskiness of different debt instruments. They're telling the world right now that U.S. Treasuries are not as safe of an investment as they were a year ago. Now, setting all else aside, Matt, that is Donald Trump's fault. Period. There are no ifs, ands, or buts about this. Our deficit, even if his tax cuts for billionaires and 100 billionaires and mega corporations is not passed, this new giveaway, this new slate of welfare for those that don't need any more help, even without all of that, the downgrade has happened. And it's reflective of the fact that it's now because of Donald Trump's self-inflicted economic chaos, unforced errors, it's going to cost the U.S. hundreds of billions of dollars more to pay for the debt that we already have. That's what happens when your credit rating goes down, as every consumer knows. Now, I'm just going to say this as an economist. The U.S. running deficits is not in and of itself a problem. Deficits at these levels do start to get to be a problem because a huge amount of the revenue that is collected through taxation and other mechanisms by our federal government, more and more of that has to go to debt financing, i.e. paying the interest on the U.S. treasuries that other investors hold, instead of going to the services or our military or our veterans or housing initiatives or all those things. I just wanted to get your non-economist reaction to this news, Matt. I think this is a very clear failing grade from those that understand risk best in our economies.
Yeah, it's not good news for anyone. It's certainly an F for Donald Trump. But it, to me, it foretells the demise of the dollar as the currency of last resort globally, as the safe haven when you're in economic trouble, people would flock to the dollar. That's not happening now. In fact, the opposite is happening. The dollar's going down. And this is almost never happens, and yet it's happening now. So this is a real decline for the U.S. economy that Donald Trump himself is responsible for and will be increasingly responsible for if he shoves through this huge tax giveaway to the super rich.
Yeah, and it's so bizarre. I'm getting some of the comments from some of these Senate Republicans, including Wisconsin's Ron Johnson, about why they're not going to support the big, beautiful bill. And they're all over the map, to be fair. Josh Hawley, Senator Collins, saying that their objections are to the gutting of Medicaid, right? They're actually concerned about middle-class people. Ron Paul, son of Rand Paul, talks about the deficit. Ron Johnson is on Earth 2 somewhere. Here's Ron Johnson's quote. "I don't think that people who voted for Donald Trump thought we'd embrace Democrat priorities." It's never been a Democrat priority to explode the deficit. Democrats have always proposed raising taxes on the rich so that they pay their fair share to help fund Democratic priorities that support middle class families, small businesses, and the working poor. I don't know what plan. I mean, again, Ron Johnson on Earth 2. Any reaction to this weird mishmash of reasonings from Republican senators as to why they won't support the bill?
Yeah, and Ron Johnson, who is one of the richest men in the Senate, has about $100 million by my back the envelope calculation. You know, wants to see the tax cuts go through for the super rich, for him and his buddies, and just wants to make people on Medicaid suffer more. I mean, that's basically what he's been saying.
Yeah, he wants to rob from the poor to give to the rich. Ron Johnson is the reverse Robin Hood of the U.S. Senate by leaps and bounds. These are just fascinating developments worthy of note, and we're going to get there. Perhaps immediately, you know, the House has scheduled, or at least had scheduled up until this afternoon's developments from the Senate, the full House vote on the big, beautiful bill to rob from the poor to give to the rich for Thursday morning at 1 a.m. I'd just like everybody to know, when legislatures schedule votes for the middle of the night so that no one is paying attention, it's because they don't want anyone to be paying attention, because they've got their hand in your pocket and they are stealing from you to help enrich their cronies and donors. Shame, shame on Mike Johnson and the House Republicans. I find all of this very ironic, Matt, given that Donald Trump just told Walmart that it should just eat the cost of the tariffs. Hey, Republicans, you know when you call Democrats communists and socialists? Yeah, communism as an economic system is where the government tells business owners what prices they should charge and how much profit they should earn. That's what Donald Trump just did. Just in case you were wondering about the differences between economic systems, I'll be right back with my guest co-host, Matt Rothschild, host of Wisconsin Forward. I'm Maggie Dawn. We continue to dig in to this afternoon's breaking economic news because it matters to your pocketbook right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Matt Rothschild's riding along in the guest co-host chair with me as he does every Monday. So thankful to have you with us here, Matt.
My pleasure, Maggie.
Yeah, the news is very mind-boggling. The new polling came out today, shows that a majority of voters in every single congressional district in the country oppose cuts to Medicaid. And yet, Senator Ron Johnson of Wisconsin thinks there should be more cuts to Medicaid. And let's be clear here. Job requirements, additional eligibility verifications, these are all the things that sound reasonable to people who maybe just listen to news in a passing way. But what they end up being are all sorts of additional administrative red tape that has this overall effect of pushing people who actually are eligible for Medicaid off of Medicaid. Some of the estimates are upwards of 8, 9, 10 plus, if not more, million people may be pushed off of Medicaid. And instead of focusing on actually what might happen if these things are put into place, and if you will result in people who should be receiving Medicaid not receiving it, Republicans want to tell you, well, it's just work requirements, just more paperwork. These aren't actually, but those are very real barriers to receiving these benefits, which for people, if they, again, disabled, working multiple jobs, trying to get it done, you make it harder and people simply won't be able to access the benefits. And maybe you don't care. Maybe that's just fine. But it will result in real harm to families and children.
And Maggie, it's also,
don't get it.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt, but it's also going to ruin the cost of healthcare in America, because people won't get their healthcare. They'll get sick, and where are they going to end up going? They're going to go back to the emergency rooms. And the costs of healthcare are astronomically higher if that's the care that they're getting on the backside rather than getting preventive care on the front side. And that was the system before the Affordable Care Act and before Medicaid covered a lot of these people. And so what's it going to do to our healthcare system if you push people off of Medicaid because they can't jump through the red tape and all the hoops?
Yeah. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. We've got economist Benga Ajilore coming up in the next segment. He was the senior advisor in the Office of the Undersecretary for Rural Development at USDA, meaning this guy knows how the economics of rural communities work. We're going to talk to him about how these draconian cuts to Medicaid are going to hurt rural folks that live in rural areas of the country, that medical care will be harder to access, that it may close medical centers. In rural Wisconsin, 32% of kids, 1 in 3, rely on Medicaid for their health coverage. And if you just broaden that to all adults younger than 65, so again, those not in the Medicare, but in the Medicaid bucket, 15%. So more than 1 in 10, one and a half people of every 10 in rural areas get their health coverage from Medicaid. That means if you are listening to this program in a rural area, you are going to know lots of people who will be losing their coverage, not able to get the health care that they need, especially preventative care, right? Like childhood checkups. That is just such a disturbing development. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Do you support additional red tape in the Medicaid program? Or do you think the government itself should maybe do a better job auditing the program and take on that burden itself instead of placing additional paperwork burdens on folks that need this essential health care? 855-752-4842. Cindy from Appleton, say hi to Matt.
Hi, Matt.
Hey,
well,
Cindy.
What's going on here is just absolutely immoral. And you talked, Matt, about how people are going to have to go to the ER. Not only that, people are going to wait until the very last minute and have more catastrophic health issues, and more people are going to end up losing their houses and whatever else livelihood they have to pay for medical bills. This is just immoral. These people ought to be tarred and feathered and put out in the city streets for us to throw rocks at them. I mean, this is horrible.
I'm Cindy. So, thanks for the call, Cindy. You're so right. I mean, it is immoral, healthcare is a human right. Bernie Sanders says it, before he brushes his teeth in the morning, but, it's actually true. And the fact that Ron Johnson is out there trying to deny people healthcare, poor people in America, it's just outrageous. You're absolutely right, Cindy.
It helps when I don't have my mic muted. My goodness. Are we doing radio here, ladies and gentlemen? Who knew? Yes. This is the real thing. The debate is happening as we speak. Your engagement will matter. It does matter. Call your House of Representatives congressperson, tell them not to be cutting Medicaid, not to be turning their back on rural Wisconsinites, on our very communities and families who depend on Medicaid. One in three kids in Wisconsin rural communities count on Medicaid for their health insurance and health coverage. We're going to continue to discuss the risks to that coverage, to medical facilities and providers across rural Wisconsin with economist Benga Ajilore. When we return, I've got Matt Rothschild and each and every one of you with me. Keep it locked right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Welcome back, everybody. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. We are working to get Dr. Ajilore. In the meanwhile, I wanted to take a couple of minutes, Matt, to talk with you, not just about the rural hospital closures, which across this state, we have seen so many rural hospitals close already. We've seen hospitals in Eau Claire, Chippewa Falls, Augusta close. We're seeing micro hospitals across the state close. And here in Milwaukee, we're even looking at closures at the Columbia St. Mary's Hospital downtown. We're finding it especially hard to find hospitals that take Medicaid, women that are needing prenatal care or in childbirth who are on Medicaid. That is becoming increasingly difficult as well. And I do believe we now have Dr. Ajilore. Dr. Ajilore, can you hear me?
I can hear you. Can you hear me?
Yes, wonderful. Welcome back to the Maggie Dawn Show. We were just getting into the meat of it. I've been setting up this topic all half hour with my co-host, Matt Rothschild. Let me properly introduce you, Dr. Ajilore. It's a pleasure to have you back on the Maggie Dawn Show here again. Dr. Ajilore is the chief economist at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, formerly the senior advisor for, and this is a big mouthful, the Office of the Undersecretary for Rural Development at the USDA. The way I like to put it is you're an economist who sounds like a regular person who can explain what's going on in our rural communities when it comes to healthcare. So welcome back to the show. Tell us what's at stake, what's currently baked into the budget reconciliation bill that will directly impact our rural communities and the healthcare that they can access when it comes to this $880 million in Medicaid cuts that's slated to occur.
Thank you. So first of all, I'm glad to be back on the show. Thank you again for the invitation. And with what's happening with Medicaid, and the reason why this is such a big deal is that they're cutting, you know, as you said, it's a massive amount. Probably the biggest cut that we've seen in over 40 years, $880 billion. But the way that they're doing the cut is by adding work requirements and other administrative burdens to basically kick people off of Medicaid. If you're not, you know, if you don't have health insurance, then you're not, quote unquote, you know, spending money on health, then that's going to, you know, cause the quote unquote savings. And so the issue here is that insurance is important to help out with the hospitals. As the impact of these rural hospitals, that their financial viability, a lot of time is based on Medicaid. And so I'll just throw out a few stats. So first of all, nearly half of all births in rural areas are financed by Medicaid. 47% of children are covered by Medicaid. And you know, one of the reasons why is that when people are using healthcare and they don't have insurance, the hospital still has to take care of them because that's what they do. And so you have all these uncompensated care costs. And just as a comparison, in states that expanded Medicaid, 3% of uncompensated care costs are for hospitals in states that expanded Medicaid. In states that did not expand Medicaid, it's over 7%. And so you see that now with this cutting the $880 billion and you know up to upwards of almost 14 million people becoming uninsured, that's going to have dire impacts for rural hospitals.
I wanted to pause here because I was making this exact point as you were joining us, specifically about childbirths. So if a woman is having a baby, what is particularly risky about this scale of cuts to Medicaid is that as we move forward, if these cuts are adopted, it will be less likely that that woman will enter a hospital during childbirth with Medicaid. And if she doesn't have Medicaid and doesn't otherwise have health insurance, the hospital, of course, still has to care for her. She's having she's in childbirth. They have to care for her. But what they won't be able to do is get the funding from Medicaid. And so what will happen is that hospitals will frankly lose revenues, lose resources, and they will be less likely to remain open going forward because they will lose a key source of revenue, i.e. Medicaid. And that, when you look at childbirths in rural areas, becomes a greater and greater risk. In other words, it snowballs as we were to move forward into the future. Am I getting that right so that folks understand how this is going to work? It's going to get worse as we go forward. It will have an increasing impact as more and more healthcare providers, including hospitals, have to reduce what they're providing or close entirely. It's not a light switch. It is, in fact, a snowball effect.
That is exactly right. And we know this because we've seen it over the last 20 years, that a lot of times that these hospitals don't close immediately, but they start losing their services. And one of the first services are the OBGYN services that go. And then once those go, then, you know, you don't have the population coming in because people, if they're thinking about moving to a community and there's a hospital and they have no OB practice, then it's like, why would you move there? So then you have this, as you said, a snowball effect, a vicious cycle. And then over time, then they start, you know, end up closing. And then the people who live there, instead of, you know, 20, 30 minutes to the nearest hospital, now it's 60, maybe 90 minutes. And that's, you know, that's devastating.
Yeah, especially if you're in labor. I mean, that's going to be an impossible situation for a woman who's in labor.
That is correct. And so that's what's so concerning about this, is that you're having these impacts in rural communities. And for what reason? You know, we're talking about Medicaid, we're talking about healthcare, but it's the same thing with SNAP and food assistance. They're cutting almost $300 billion from that. And all that to pay for a tax cut for wealthy people who already have money, who are already doing well, and you're, you know, doing this on the backs of low-income and middle-income families.
I want to address, like, dead on, Dr. Edgelori, the idea of, quote, work requirements and additional verifications. There is a pernicious misapprehension that I hear from conservative friends of goodwill, even those of goodwill, those who aren't trying to engage in tropes of years gone by, that folks that need Medicaid aren't working or are avoiding work. Or can you help us understand, the vast majority of people who receive Medicaid are eligible for Medicaid. There isn't some great number of people that amounts to hundreds of millions or billions of dollars that shouldn't be receiving Medicaid assistance. Am I correct there? What is the origin of these Republican moves to try to put these additional, I just call it administrative red tape that has no other purpose, not to improve the program, not to ensure that only those that are eligible are getting it, but simply to make it so much harder to get it that fewer people obtain the benefits that they're actually entitled to? Is that true? How are we to view these, quote, requirements and additional, they're trying not to say that they're cuts, but they really are. Help us understand.
So this is a long-running narrative, 40, 50 years running, where we're looking at kind of what we call the deserved poor and undeserved poor, where they try to make this image of people, you know, what we've seen in the last, you know, couple decades, is they talk about the boy who's playing video games and not wanting to work and being lazy, kind of this lazy trope. And so what that does is that makes it, you know, people feel better about the cuts, and instead of actually cutting spending, what you do is just add these layers of red tape, as you mentioned, and these burden to be able to kind of make it harder for people who are eligible for the program, who are eligible for health insurance. It makes it difficult for them, or just a burden so high that they just give up trying. And, you know, there was, you know, data showing that most of the people who are on Medicaid are working. And the people who aren't working are the people who are disabled or who have, you know, care issues. And so everyone, I think the stat is almost like 94% of people on Medicaid are working and who are able to work. And so all this does is kick people off who are working, who are eligible from the program. And what's even worse is that some of the work requirements, you know, you have to look at, especially in these rural communities, how many opportunities for employment are there? And so there's people who are trying to work, looking for work, but the opportunities are not there. And then now they have issues with health, being able to afford health insurance and health care. And then that's, you know, making it detrimental for the whole community.
Yeah, we're speaking with Dr. Ajilorio, who's the chief economist at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities, a great think tank in Washington, D.C. What is the consequence, other than callousness, of making it much harder for people to get their Medicaid? Because there are downstream consequences to it.
Yeah, so we talked a lot about the rural hospitals, but you have to look at it, you know, from the individuals. The biggest material hardship for people in rural communities is medical debt. And so now you have more likely to take on medical debt. It lowers your credit score. You're more likely to have personal bankruptcies. And, you know, just again, you think about people who rack up debt and you work so hard to try to get ahead of it, and you just keep falling behind, almost like it's almost like quicksand. And so now you're kicking all these people off, 14 million people, upwards of 14 million people. Now you're sticking them in quicksand, and it's just going to be even harder for them to get ahead.
It seems to me, Dr. Ajilore, that if one were a very callous, calculating politician, and the purpose was very much so to simply cut programs regardless of whom that might hurt, and you knew that you couldn't walk into the halls of Congress and say, you know what, screw working people and the working poor, because that's not going to be a politically salient message, especially if you represent really hardworking folks in rural congressional districts throughout, I don't know, the western and northern parts of a state like Wisconsin. You'd have to come up with some smokescreen, something that sounds facially reasonable, as you reach your hand into the pocket of those working middle-class families and the working poor and rob them blind to give tax cuts to those that already have more than any one of your actual constituents could ever, ever possibly wish for. And if you had to come up with some sort of a smokescreen and bogus rationale, one such rationale would be things that sound like work requirements and additional verification steps to receive something that is at base a human right, and that is the right to access meaningful preventative care and health care. You were addressing that in part. This is part of a multi-decades plan to distinguish between deserving poor and undeserving poor. Dr. Ajilore, shouldn't we really be talking about what rich people are deserving of such windfalls of additional tax cuts? Where should our focus truly be to understand what's at stake here?
You hit the nail on the head, focusing on the rich. So just on Friday, the credit rating service Moody's downgraded U.S. debt because of this problem of fiscal sustainability. But they're always talking about how, well, we don't have a revenue problem, it's a spending problem, we need to cut spending. We've been cutting spending for 40 years and we still have the sustainability problem. The problem is we've been cutting taxes at the same time. And even just, you know, before 2017, but 2008, 2001, you know, all the way back to 1986, we keep cutting taxes. And at some point, you know, enough's enough. Where we want to be more fiscally sustainable, we have to raise revenue and then support the people at the low end and make a strong safety net.
We can raise revenues by taxing the rich their fair share. It's not any more complicated or simple than that. Thank you, Dr. Benga Ajilore, Chief Economist at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Go check out their website. If you don't believe us over the radio, go check out Dr. Ajilore's great work and the great work from the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. Our discussion of this topic continues on the other side with Matt Rothschild and me, Maggie Dawn. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Go back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. My name is Maggie Dawn. You're listening to The Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. I've got a fine co-host with me. His name is Matt Rothschild. He hosts Wisconsin Forward, a podcast that you can find at civicmedia.us, on Apple Pods, Spotify, or wherever you find your favorite pods. Big thanks to Dr. Benga Ajilore. He's been on the show before. He's the chief economist at the Center on Budget and Policy Priorities. We've been discussing the cruel, I guess that is the word that most frequently, cruel and callous cuts to Medicaid, that is really the cornerstone or one of the major pieces of the current budget reconciliation plan that has been moving through Congress. The House has slated their vote on the big, beautiful bill for 1 a.m. Thursday morning. Why are you hiding from the American public if this is such a great thing? Today, five senators coming out in opposition to the bill for a variety of reasons. Wisconsin's very own Ron Johnson, his reason being that the cuts just aren't cruel enough. And he doubled down on that sentiment this weekend at the Wisconsin State Republican Convention in Rothschild, Wisconsin. No relation to my fine co-host.
Don't blame me on that one.
Don't blame me on that one, says Matt. Let's take a listen to Rojo, who has got to go this weekend, saying, give me more cruelty. We need more cruelty. Cut two.
It's not serious. And again, the result is an increase in deficits, an increase in the projected debt. It's completely unacceptable. So I'm digging my heels in. And I know a lot of people. I know a lot of people, because trust me, I understand the dynamic here. You know, boy, you got to support the president. You got to pass it. He's saying it's. No, I ran because we were mortgaging our children's future. I'm running to help save America. I'm doing this to save Social Security. So we have the financial wherewithal really? To save Social Security and Medicare and Medicaid for those who it's designed for, the vulnerable, not single age or single working age childless adults. Okay? That is how the system is being gamed right now.
No, it's not. If
he was worried about the deficit and the debt, he wouldn't be giving the $1 trillion away to the super rich or $3 trillion to the super rich. Like him. Again, he's one of the richest people in the Senate. He's got about $100 million of assets. He can't understand the people who need to rely on Medicaid. Not for a minute.
Nor does he care to. 855-752-4842. This is House of Representative Democrat Brendan Doyle making it real clear what's actually going on here. Let's take a listen. Cut 13.
Simply put, besides all of the other important issues involved in this bill, this is the overarching truth. It is the biggest tax cuts for billionaires in American history, paid for by throwing 13.7 million Americans off their health care coverage. Now, those aren't my claims. That is not subjective. The nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office just this week confirmed that at least 13,700,000 Americans will lose their health care if the GOP bill for billionaires becomes law. That is bad economics. It is unconscionable. Even conservative Republican Senator Josh Hawley called it morally wrong. I can't believe I'm saying this, but Josh Hawley is right.
Apparently, I should be in Congress, too, because I've been saying the same exact thing on repeat for the last few weeks. It is unconscionable. It's not just bad economics. It's immoral, which is the point. Let's go to the phones. We've got our friend Ron from Milwaukee. Ron, please say hello to Matt. What you got for us?
Hi, Matt. Hi, Matt.
Hey, Ron.
Boy, it gets so tiresome listening to these guys. I mean, I've been around politics for upwards of 50 years involved or just voting, and their story hasn't changed, except their rationale has changed. For example, here you have Ron Johnson, who just spent a couple of terms in office, or nearly that much, saying Social Security is a Ponzi scheme. Right?
Right
now he's saying, I want to save the Ponzi scheme. You know, he's not saying I want to reform things. He's saying I want to save it. I don't know what saving it means. It means, you know, running it into the ground. It sounds good until you pick it apart. It's just, it's so frustrating. These people, you know, they sort of weasel around and everything. I would say the only thing I feel good about is that I do think people are starting to catch on.
From your lips to everyone's ears, Ron, Social Security, you want to fix that funding? You know, the pressure point that's coming? Scrap the cap. Actually tax the dollars earned over these ludicrous income cutoffs, where after I think it's like your 260,000th dollar, you don't have any Social Security tax applied. Just
Elon
get rid
Musk,
of that.
Yeah, Elon Musk pays the same amount in Social Security taxes as someone who's making $260,000. That's crazy.
Insane.
I want to thank Ron from Milwaukee for calling. I also want to encourage everyone to call their representatives. Call Ron Johnson, 202-224-3121. 202-224-3121.
I got Matt Rothschild in the guest co-host seat with me. I'm coming back. So is Matt, and so are each and every one of you. Get on the phone lines now. It is wide open. It is just going to be Matt, myself, and each and every one of you. We're going to talk about the recent Supreme Court emergency decisions. We're going to talk about Joe Biden's cancer diagnosis. We're going to be talking about Ukraine, all coming up next here on the Maggie Dawn Show on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. We'll be right back after these messages.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.